Hey, back at it. Bootstrapped Web, episode 110. Jordan, what's up, buddy?
Hi, Brian. I'm going to apologize for my bad mood ahead of time.
Ah, man.
I'm cranky.
Why is that? What's going on? Let's do a quick therapy session here.
All right. Fine, let's do it. I'm actually getting some help on this from a Bootstrap Web podcast listener named Chris Ronzio.
I know Chris. Yeah.
Yeah. He's very, very good at organization, what he does. He's kind of, he reached out to me a few months ago and was like, hey man, I like the podcast if you ever need help on this sort of thing. And I didn't like dismiss it. I was just like, you know what? I'm too busy for that. I'm too busy to get unbusy. And then at some point, like last week, I just hit a max of frustration and I just wrote an email to him just titled help.
Nice.
So we just spoke actually like an hour ago. And so I'm working with Chris. And so my frustration is around the fact that I do not spend a large enough percentage of my time on strategic, important stuff. Just so much of my time just evaporates. It just gets burned away. And it's like this very tricky situation because the company has the momentum of its own. So it's not like we're standing still and we're like, got to do something. We're growing. It's just not fast enough, but it is fast enough that it keeps us busy. So I'm busy all the time. I only spend, call it 10% of my time on like really strategic marketing things that push things forward. And
yeah, like building new stuff.
Building new stuff that outsiders, that strangers see, right? I do a lot that our existing customers see and deal with and read and all that, and they're very happy because of that. But so the way I look at it is we have the same person responsible for generating leads that's responsible for handling the leads, and that just ensures that you're not going to be really good at either one. So combine that with the fact that I feel such a big opportunity with this new product that I'm losing my mind because I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not happy over the past few months about how I've managed my time, but now I like refuse to accept it with this new opportunity. I refuse to let it jeopardize. So that's why it's just been coming to the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, and this kind of gets into what we're talking about here today and what my update for this week is. It's like, I think sometimes it's about developing a new role at the company. For somebody else to take on, like actually like a new job title that didn't exist before, whether that's customer success or it's a sales role or it's a customer support or like whatever tasks, and maybe it's like a mix of different tasks that you're currently doing that feel like you should be doing, but really at the end of the day, at a certain point after doing them for long enough, it's actually time for you to hand it off and start to focus on bigger things.
Right. Like as I even heard myself speaking to Chris, I also spoke with Tim Conley, who's kind of a wizard at this stuff also. I just heard myself like just making excuses. It's just excuses. So what I'm doing now is I'm trying two things, you know, to make it manageable and achievable. Number one is I'm writing a list of all the things I do just to see and spelled out what am I doing every day? Because I'm doing like 100 things during the day, but I don't have a good grasp of what they are. I just kind of have this sense of like, I kind of feel everything and I have the best sense of what's happening in the company. So if somebody pings us on the intercom with a question, I know that that person signed up about a year ago and had a bad experience in their onboarding. And so we should be like gentle with them, right? Like no one else knows that. And then you convince yourself that it's really important that you're involved because you're the only one that knows that. So it's all these like crazy web of excuses. So I'm trying to break free of that. So the first thing is to write down all the things I'm doing. And the second thing is to block out time. Is what I've made this huge mistake where I go into the day and I say, all right, I have two different lists. I have an important list and I have a bullshit list. So I come into the day and I say, let me just get the bullshit out of the way so then I can focus on the important stuff.
No. Dude, right. The other way around, man. Get the important stuff done first and I put the bullshit in the afternoon. That's what
I do. But here's my problem. I'm not big on mornings. My mornings just kind of fade away, which is another excuse. So I always look at the afternoon and I'm like, that's my favorite time. A few hours in a row, no stress, put on a podcast, just like don't have to stop for lunch, just chill out. And so that's, I've been trying to line up with my preference for the afternoon, and it has not been working.
I, you know, to be honest, I don't get the afternoon thing. I know that some people, I think they're a minority, but some people are night owls and they get a lot of work done like late at night. That's definitely not me. I'm definitely, I think, in the majority, which is a morning person. And I wasn't always this way, but I developed it a couple years ago. But now, like, mornings for me are sacred. And I'm figuring this out now, like, I'm with the family and two really small kids at home, like, the mornings are kind of dominated by, you know, right, get breakfast ready for them and change the diapers and all that crap. But you know, as the sooner I can get into my office and working early in the morning, the better. Because that to me is like, I got to capture these like 4 or 5 hour, like morning hours before lunchtime, because I work like not like hyper speed, not super fast, but super efficient. That's when I'm going to get the creative work done, the creative thinking, knock out the important stuff on my to-do list. And then all of my, like, I literally set up my Calendly so that my appointments are in the afternoon and not in the morning.
Right. So I'm starting to attempt that shift, because whatever I've been doing doesn't work. So I think I'm going to try to go toward that.
Yeah. But Chris Ronzio really knows this stuff. I interviewed him on the Productize podcast, and I don't think that episode is aired yet, but it's coming out, you know, sometime probably this summer. He's a smart dude. So
Cool. I'm looking forward to working with him.
Cool. So how about a quick update before we get into, by the way, today's topic, I just wrote an article about managing people, like learning to become a manager. If you're kind of a solopreneur or a freelancer, you know, that takes a pretty long transition. So I just wrote a pretty long article about that. It'll probably be published by the time this article comes out. So I thought we'd talk through that a bit. And I know that you've been growing your team and different iterations with your team at Carthook. So we can talk through that stuff as well.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. But before we hop into that, what are some quick updates?
So I think the biggest update that I can share that's kind of useful to other people is the launch strategy that we're using. It's more of a sales strategy that we're using for the new product, and kind of the thinking around that and how we're setting things up. So, right, the situation we're in is that we have a cart abandonment product. While the company is growing, we have not been able to break through in any meaningful way to capture, you know, a large portion of the market quickly. Whether it's the fact that there are a bunch of competitors, it's also a price thing. We're not the cheapest, but we're not the most expensive. We're starting to kind of get lost in the middle a little bit. So people that use the product are very happy and love it, and that's great. We have very low churn. But for whatever reason, we have not been successful in kind of breaking through. So a lot of the reason we drifted toward a new product is because we want to go faster. We don't want just this nice, you know, slow kind of climb. So now that we have this new product that's unique in the market, it is like, it's the first time we've been in a position where we have something unique. If you want this, the only place to get it is with us. What I tried to really focus on for the past few weeks is, how do we take advantage of that to grow revenue a lot faster than we have? And the conclusion I came to was the right way to do it is with webinars. And so I kind of went on this like education trip of just learning. You know, I'm familiar with webinars and I've done courses on them and I've done a few of them myself and I like them and all that. But I really wanted to figure out, what are people doing now? So I spoke with Tim Page from Lead Pages. I've just been speaking to everyone I can get on Skype. I'm speaking with Keith Perhack. I think we're actually going to hire him.
By the way, let me ask you about that, because this is something that I constantly struggle with, is just reaching out to people for advice.
Yes.
How do you do that? and I've done it from time to time, but like, my fear is that I know a lot of these people I'm actually friends with and it's not a big deal, but just in general, I just know how busy people are, and to ask for free time, like, how do you do that?
Well, I haven't really been asking for free time. I have been asking with the intention of hiring, and that changes the conversations completely.
Well, I mean, people who don't necessarily offer their time for sale, like other founders.
So that just happens. So, you know, everyone has their thing, what they're good at. The networking thing is my thing. So I don't even know how to define it or explain how to do it, because that, it just comes innate. I'm not good at other things that people are good at. This thing is what I'm good at, so I go with it. So I network like a madman behind the scenes. So, for example, how do I get Tim Page on the phone or on Skype? I talked to Greg at Systemly about hiring him to build out our webinar funnel. And at the end of the call, it turns out that we're not a good fit because he focuses exclusively on Infusionsoft right now. So, okay, cool. Great to speak with you. If you need anything, right? So we do the, you know, we're buddies. At the end, I ask, hey, man, I'm trying to learn as much as I can about this. You know anyone that I should talk to? And he says, yeah, Tim from LeadPage is a good friend of mine. Let me introduce you. So I say, of course, I want to talk to Tim. And then Tim's, you know, kind with his time and jumps on the phone with me. And then as soon as we get off the phone, I think about what Tim was talking about and I send him whatever value I can and introductions I can to pay him back for his time.
I love it.
I mean, I love that. Because what I've done in the past is just cold emails, which is fine and sometimes success, sometimes not, understandably. But what you're doing there is an introduction, asking for an introduction, but not just randomly. You're saying like, I have this goal. I want to learn about webinars, you know?
Yes. Who should I talk to? Right. Who has done like a million webinars in the past year for a software company? Tim.
Very cool.
So I've been speaking with a lot of vendors, and you learn a lot from vendors also because they try to give you value in the conversation to show you that they know what they're talking about. So it's not like I'm cynically just gaining value. I'm looking for the right person to hire. And so you think about what happens at a webinar funnel. You need Facebook ads to drive registrations. So I've been talking to Facebook advertising people. You need copywriting for the emails. You need the webinar structure. You need the webinar presentation. So there's a whole bunch of stuff you need help on. So anyway, to get back to the strategy, what I started to notice and started to hear people talk about is that a lot of these software companies are using webinars as a driver of revenue. And the way they're doing it is by offering the annual plan as the only option on the webinar. So go to ClickFunnels. Go to LeadPages, go to Samcart, go to a lot of software companies, and you see on their pricing page, 50, 100 bucks a month, whatever it is. But if you go onto the webinar, they'll make one offer, and that will be an annual, somewhere between $500 and $1,000 for an annual plan, and they'll stack a bunch of value as incentive to sign up. And you kind of only get that offer on the webinar. So it's like exclusive and time sensitive and scarce and all that. So that's kind of the strategy that I saw people using. I'm trying to be smart, and this relates to hiring that we'll talk about later. I looked at it and said, I want to accomplish that. I'm not going to do that whole thing myself. I'm going to spend money wisely and hire the right Facebook person, the right funnel person, and the last piece of it that I haven't found yet is the help me with my presentation itself.
Okay. Actually, I think I know a guy.
There we go, Brian.
Unfortunately, I don't know his name off the top of my head. Otherwise, I would promote it here on the podcast. But I spoke to him through the Productize course, and I met him at MicroConf Europe. And he specializes in presentations and coaching you on how to give a good presentation. So
there we go. Is he from Ireland by chance?
I don't think so.
Like in the fitness industry? Anyway, no. I've gone deep on this whole thing.
I'll find his name. Hopefully we can include it in the show notes. So like, where are you at in terms of the process so that we can give listeners like an update maybe next week or the week after?
Sure. Right. So here's like the inside look at it. So it's the end of May. I want to run a webinar. So you got to be realistic, right? This stuff takes time. So I say to myself, I want to run the first webinar in a month. What do I need to do between now and then to make that successful? So the first thing I think to myself is, yes, I need to build out the stuff. You need the Facebook ads. You need the landing page for registration. You need the thank you page. You need some videos. You need email content. So we're hiring strategically for those pieces. The other thing you need is a great presentation. One of the key parts in a great presentation is proof. You don't want to just say, this thing is amazing and that because I say so, you want real numbers. And so what we're doing now is we are onboarding our first pilot customers and I'm building the presentation basically with those slides blank in the hopes and anticipation that the early customers were going to be able to use those numbers to say this is how much they have improved. So like, right, so we're getting pilot customers on board. The other thing we're doing is I actually just sent an email to Audience Ops, to my rep there. And I said, hey, Kat, we have a Shopify-specific product launching. I want Shopify-specific content. And so I've asked right now, I'm getting blog content that's very specific to Shopify. I've also reached out to a different writer to write two Shopify-specific articles so we can start running Facebook ads to just promote that so we can start pixeling people for retargeting now, right? Right? Why wait for a month? Why not promote blog content now that's just value-based and then get them on a retargeting audience and then be able to, a month from today when we start running ads for the actual webinar itself, we have this, you know, a custom audience of 1,000 people who have clicked on something that's very specific to Shopify. So it's everything in anticipation. So, okay, what can we do now that will make it more successful in a month?
Awesome. And yeah, I mean, speaking of Audience Ops, you know, that's great to hear that you did reach out. I was actually going to ask you about that, you know, with the new product launch. And that's something that we're doing now to like trying to do a better job of reaching back out to our customers every couple of weeks to get an update on what's happening in your business, what's new coming up. You know, we're setting up a system of like quarterly calls instead of just the initial kickoff call. So we're going to be rolling that out pretty soon. But
yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And I might have glossed over that, but the point of that is to be able to promote content on Facebook through ads and be able to show it to your to the audience that you want to go after. And when they click on that, hit your landing page, hit your blog to read the post, that sets the pixel so that they can be added to a custom audience that you can advertise to later. That's a little right, more detail.
Very cool. Yeah, any other updates?
No, that's it. I think the last remaining piece of that is the math behind it. The reason people do this, the reason it's attractive, is because you can make, if you spend, let's call it $5,000 in Facebook ads, and you get registrations down to, call it $5 per registration. So for a spend of $5,000, you get 1,000 registrations. Out of the 1,000 registrations, if you use retargeting properly and have good emails, you can get 40% of the people to either attend the webinar or watch the webinar after the fact. And if you can convert about 10% of them, you take a look, 1,000 registrations, 400 people see it in one form or another. If you can close 10%, that's 40 people. If you sell the product for $500 to $1,000, on the low end at $500 times 40, that's $20,000. So you spent $5,000 on ads and brought in $20,000 in revenue. And of course, a year later, that, you know, a lot of those people are going to stay as annual customers. So that's what I saw as that's what we need to do. Instead of growing by $2,000 or $3,000 in MRR every month, let's grow by $15,000, $20,000 in revenue a lot faster. So that's why it's enticing. And then the bigger picture of that is if you can work on it for a few weeks and get your webinar to convert anywhere near 10%, and you know you can make money on it, then you can go to the affiliates and say, I will give you 50% if you promote to your list. And then that way you can get hundreds of registrations without spending money on the ads and only paying for the 50% of the revenue that comes in. So that's how you can build it in-house, get good at it, and then go to affiliates and in that way, companies like ClickFunnels, LeadPages, that's how they make millions of dollars a year selling software through webinars.
Yeah, that's awesome. You laid it out perfectly. And you know, webinars is one of those things that I've done webinars for various types of product launches, like, you know, between productize and some things in Audience Ops. It's on my list to start a routine of monthly webinars for Audience Ops, to drive like new clients, but also just general educational workshops, you know?
Right. It's funny you mentioned the word routine, because that's, as soon as I decided to pursue the strategy, I said to myself, how do I take choice out of it and make it a routine? And what I came up with was, I'm going to hire someone, spend the money on it, to build a webinar system that forces me to run a weekly webinar. So it's like I'm hiring vendors to put me into a box that I have no choice.
So like you just spend all this money on it. Like you've got to run it.
Right. Not only that, but like everything runs. The Facebook ads run. The landing page says this Wednesday. The emails go out after Wednesday until the cart closes on Saturday night. And then the Facebook ads run again starting on Sunday to promote. So it's like you have no choice, man. This is the whole system around you just pointing toward sit in this seat for 2 hours and give a presentation.
Yep. I love it. Cool. So we'll definitely get an update on that over the next couple of weeks and kind of follow that through for sure.
Yeah, but unless it goes really well, in which case I'll never talk about it again. Yeah.
And then it's like become super secret. Yeah. Cool. So some updates on my end. This week, I'm just doing a hire, like an interviewing frenzy of new employees for Audience Ops. I'm basically interviewing for two open positions right now, which, I mean, by the time that this podcast publishes, these positions are not going to be open anymore. But, you know, I've already kind of narrowed down the applicants, selected about five or six people to invite to interviews for each position. Been holding those on every day this week. So those two positions are project manager and editor. And the things that I'm thinking about there are just growing the number of project managers that we have. So as of today, we have two. We have Kat and Claire is our newer one. She's been on board for a little bit more than a month. We're going to bring on two more. So we'll have a total of four, and Kat's going to be shifting into a slightly different role inside Audience Ops. The goal here is to, you know, because our client list keeps growing and we need to reduce the number of clients that each individual manager manages. And it's not even so much an hourly thing. Like it's not like too many clients means too many hours. It's just too many things, too many balls in the air to manage. So trying to grow that team. And then the editors, like we've been having the writers also do editing of each other's articles, but now I'm going to have two dedicated editors so that the editing piece is like a just one person's job and the writers can just focus on the writing. So that's happening as well. I think that'll kind of clean things up in our process quite a bit. And, you know, it's just a challenge to kind of hire for two positions at the same time. And like I spent all of last week just filtering through applications, but, you know, getting through it now.
So the driving force is what is it that's telling you we need new people, we need new roles?
Well, for project management, well, really for all of it is we've identified a few new bottlenecks in our production process that weren't necessarily there before. Like things run perfectly smoothly when you're at 10, 15 clients. But once you get to 10, like 20, 30 plus clients, mm-hmm. The wheels start to fall off a little bit.
Right. So just capacity and
capacity, like things are being turned in a little bit later than we need. Little details are getting missed sometimes. And for the manager's point of view, it's just too much to keep track of. That should help. And then the other thing, project management related, is I'm trying out Flow as a project management tool. That's at getflow.com. And I really like it. It's a tool that's been around a few years and it's mm-hmm. gone through a few different redesigns over the years.
Yeah, I used to use it.
Yeah, but I think the current iteration of it is really nice.
Yeah, that's a MetaLab product
yes.
that was acquired by somebody cool I spoke to at some point. Someone in the South that they acquire a few of these SaaS companies. So it's originally a MetaLab product and now owned by someone else.
Yeah. So what I like about it is that it's completely to-do list based, but it has, and this is the only app that I've seen this combination, it has Kanban layout built into it. As everyone knows, I'm like big on Trello, and Trello is still super central to what we do in Audience Ops. You can view your to-do lists in Flow in a Kanban style layout, you know, which is just like Trello. You can kind of move them from side to side. So between that and just the fact that now we have a larger team with different people and different roles. So as I said, we have a couple of managers. We now have a marketing tech person on board who manages some PPC campaigns for us. So he's got stuff going on, and one of our managers also does content strategy, and we're overhauling our content strategy for clients. And we're doing all these like internal projects right now that we need basically a dedicated PM tool to manage. But like before this, we didn't really have anything other than like Slack and email and Trello. And we didn't really use Trello for project management. That's really just for managing our production line of articles. So I'm trying out Flow. I think it works pretty well. It's really good for collaboration. It even has, we're not using this yet, but it has like a chat feature built into it, which essentially is Slack built into Flow. And I don't think that we would really ever leave Slack at this point. And I don't think we would really leave Trello either, but I think the option is there. If Flow really starts to stick, you know, beyond just these internal projects, then I could see us, you know, potentially flipping the switch and kind of moving everything into it. The other thing that's going on is, as I've talked about before, this year, a big initiative is to launch the Audience Ops training product. And this is going to be like a flagship training product for folks who want to build a content marketing team in-house, like a content marketing department inside your company. And so I'm just taking the very first steps of this. And the very first step is to create a survey, which I've created and I'm about to launch probably by the time this goes out. So you can check that out at audienceops.com/survey. And what this is I've got like a video message from me just talking through it for 2 minutes and then a bunch of questions. And my goal here is to understand, all right, like I kind of give you an overview of what we have in mind, like what's going to be included in this training program and who it's for and how you would use it. But the questions are around like, all right, which parts of this sound useful? Which parts sound redundant or you wouldn't make use of? You know, here's some idea on pricing. What are your thoughts on the value proposition? I'm trying to get some actual feedback from folks. And then based on the responses from this survey, I'm going to then reach out to people who filled it out to get on calls and dig in even further, maybe record a few calls so I can listen back later. And like, that's usually my number one starting point when I'm just beginning a new product is get something out in front of people, send it to my list, send it to the Audience Ops list and start getting real feedback rather than, and like get it out of my own head and get it out of just brainstorming mode and start to work off of real data from people.
Right. So before you jump into creation, you're saying, let me make sure I get it right.
Yeah.
Instead of assuming, oh, you know what everyone wants? They want, you know, the exact step-by-step process. Maybe that's not what they want. Maybe they want more something more strategic or theoretical.
Yeah. And I'm also laying out like a list of the topics that would be included to figure out, all right, what should we actually produce in terms of educational content? What should the format be? And should we include one-on-one training, group training? Should we include, video, audio, all that kind of stuff. So again, that's at audienceops.com/survey. That's about all I got in terms of updates.
Nice, man.
So,
what's you thinking on the time frame for the course or info product, whatever you want to call it?
My goal is to have it launched by the end of the summer, beginning of fall. Maybe it'll be sooner, but you know, I don't want to speak too soon. It's like we haven't done anything except for create this survey so far. So, and just given my schedule, because this is going to be a big focus for me to be working on, and a couple of people on the team are going to be working on it. But I'm getting back to a normal like working schedule now, and we're in the new house, and we've got a baby at home, and I'm trying to figure out how productive can I actually be in a given month.
Yeah. You
know, 'cause like now, like my previous months have been all over the place in terms of productivity. And now I'm trying to figure out like what's normal,
right?
New situation,
right? What can actually expect?
Yeah.
Would you consider a boot camp type thing? I think you're being more methodical than that. You know, what some people do is they sell it before they create it. And then you just use that momentum as the,
yeah, you know, I'm thinking about
week
that.
Week 2, week 3, week four.
I am thinking about doing some sort of pre-sell. But I don't know the timeline of that yet. We'll have to have already created at least the outline and a couple of the lessons so that we know the template of how a lesson would be created. Like, let's say there's 20 lessons. If we've created one or two and they're good,
you have your format.
Then we have our format. Then I can do a webinar and like pre-sell it and say it's opening up in 30 days and then just hustle for 30 days to get the other 18 lessons done.
Right. Get released once a week type of thing.
Yeah. The other thought that I had was to do something that I know Justin Jackson has done this in the past is do just a paid webinar, maybe a series of paid webinars for a lower price, just come in for a live training. It would be like a light version of the type of training that would be in the course, but just selling seats to that webinar would be a good kind of first step to validate, are people willing to pay for this and get their feedback on the content. I'm kind of up in the air on what that's going to look like. We'll see how that goes. So I'll keep folks, you know, updated through the summer as we get rolling on that. So, you know, maybe we'll just spend a few minutes on this topic that I finally got around to writing a new article on my personal blog after, I don't know how many months of not writing, but you know, it was one of those topics that it kind of flowed out really, really fast. And whenever that happens, it's like whenever I get an idea, like I'm probably like in the shower or something, I get an idea for a blog post. It's like, I better just like go downstairs and write this thing before I just get too busy to write anything. And the thing goes away. So I just did that earlier this week.
Yeah. So what's the impetus? You've just been thinking about hiring in general lately?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of hiring in general, and the team has been growing, and as I've talked about, there are new roles being developed in the team. And I've just gone from, like, audience ops this year has gone from zero to, we have 17 people on the team now, some full-time, some part-time. And so the working title of this blog post that's coming out in the next couple of days is From Solopreneur to Managerpreneur. And it's kind of in response to a question that I receive repeatedly over the past year or 2 years from readers who say, how do you go from working solo to managing a team? When did you hire and manage your first employee? And how did you learn how to do that and where to find them? And, you know, I get a mix of these types of questions. So I wanted to write like an in-depth guide to kind of do a blanket covering of my thoughts on this. And I think a lot of this kind of stems from people are afraid to manage other people. So I've found that. And I found that like becoming a manager can be like an objection to launching a business that's bigger than just you. There's a lot of freelancers and consultants out there who they're used to being a freelance designer, making a pretty good living, and they want to start a product business or they want to start a productized service, but the idea of hiring employees and managing them is just, they're turned off by that idea before they even get into it.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, what is that? No one really wants to do all the work themselves forever unless it's, you know, something that you really enjoy doing. And that's, you know, God bless, you do whatever you want.
But
if you want
to build a business. That I've been in this boat myself too. Like back when I was solo freelancing, before that I had been working at agencies and I didn't necessarily enjoy having bosses or going to meetings or being in a company and going to meetings and things like that. So
right. Maybe it's bad experiences that people are taking with them.
I think once you're on your own self-employed, you start to associate managing people under you with what it's like to be managed. Right, and they are not the same thing.
Yeah. Or lack of freedom or something negative that to bring into it.
Yeah. And so what I wanted to do here is the other thing is you don't become a manager overnight and you don't become a good manager overnight. It takes a lot of time, but also several levels of managing and managing different types of employees and contractors. And you can kind of start to get your feet wet. And at every one of these levels, so I've laid out about six levels. At each of these levels, there are certain aspects of becoming a manager that you're going to learn as you go once you reach this level. And that's really the purpose of this article is, you know, it's a learn by doing process. So let me just kind of start rolling it out here. I'm calling level zero, not level one because, sorry, someone's at the door. My dog's kind of freaking out. But so this is level zero and it's called managing subcontractors. And I call it level zero because this is like before you have a product business. This is still when you're consulting or you're freelancing and you have projects, like client projects that you can bring in a subcontractor on. A prerequisite for this is like you've landed projects with enough of a budget and scope to allow for subcontracting certain parts of the project. And then some of the essential management skills that you would pick up at this level are, you know, you can learn how to budget and profit margin. So no longer is it 100% profit going to you as a solo guy. Now it's, you have to figure out, okay, these are my costs for these contractors, and this is how much I could take home. And then also like setting deliverables and deadlines and kind of managing that for a coworker, that takes some getting used to as well.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah. And is that the same thing as like if I hire a freelancer to create, an ad for me, ad creative, like, okay, here is just a job. Here is money. Here's the instructions. Give me back what the end product is.
Absolutely. Cause that's like project based, right? Like you can bring someone in for a defined start and finish. But I think the difference is when you're doing client work, you already have the money coming in or you've signed a contract where you know this project is $20,000. I'm going to budget $10,000 to hire a designer and developer on it, and I'm going to make a $10,000 profit. That's clear cut. And that's for someone who's never worked with a team before, I think a good first step if you're in that freelancing consulting game. If you're already running a product business and you decide, okay, I'm going to budget $5,000 for this, that's still like an entrepreneurial venture. Like I'm going to invest this to see an ROI down the line, but there's still a little bit of a gray area in terms of what that's going to be.
Okay. So that's level zero. What's one?
So level one would be after you have a product business that's launched and you're starting to have a need. I call this managing a part-time assistant or a customer support role. So the prerequisite here before getting into this management level is you've got to identify a few repeatable weekly tasks that can make up this person's job. And again, this is part-time, so they don't have to be a full-time employee. They could be 5-10 hours a week, and just find 5-10 hours worth of tasks that consistently happen every single week, week in, week out, all year long for your business that you're currently doing that you can delegate to an assistant. Maybe this is a tier one customer support type of role. Maybe it's a virtual assistant, an administrative assistant, a bookkeeper. These are the kinds of examples of this type of role to start kind of delegating. Essential skills that you would pick up at this level, learning to delegate repeatable tasks so that you're just not doing all the like mechanical, repeatable work yourself. And then also like, since this is not a project based, this is ongoing. So at this level, you're going to learn the management routines. So training new employees, running a weekly or biweekly payroll, daily or weekly meetings, if that's your thing. They don't necessarily have to be your thing. Like me personally, we don't do weekly stand-up meetings or anything like that in Audience Ops. You know, you can kind of figure that out. Evaluating employee progress. So like, again, these are things like if you've never done them before, you kind of have to get used to them. But the only way to do it is to hop in and do it. The next level up, which I'm calling level two, is managing a part-time creative role. So again, it can still be part-time. It doesn't have to fill up 40 hours a week, but a creative role I don't necessarily mean creative, like they have to be like a designer. What I think of
non-standardized, non-manual, repeatable process.
Yeah. I think of a creative person as like somebody who produces assets for your business. So those could be like design assets, like visual assets. They could be a developer who creates functionality, helps build an app or features. It could be a salesperson who closes sales. It could be a marketing person who produces leads. Like you're adding value to the business in some way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is really tough because I find right at this level is where it's more work to get them set up and managed and give them wireframes and ideas. And it's not like, here, go do this project. And based on your previous history, I know that you know how to do it. So here's some info and go do it. This all of a sudden becomes like, okay, now I have a to-do item on my list that I need to get done for them to get started.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think that it does take more work and more preparation to bring in this type of person, whatever role they're in. If you personally are a designer and you're hiring a designer, then you already have the knowledge and experience of like how to evaluate designers, how to give them a project to work on. But if you're not a designer and you're hiring a designer, then hopefully you're hiring someone who knows how to ask you the right questions and get the right information from you so that they can do a killer job. I think an essential skill that you would pick up at this level is how to manage creative output without micromanaging. And that's really tough. Like for me, if I'm a design, like I come from a front end design background, hiring a front end developer, I used to have a huge problem with that because I would be like, you're not using the right H1 or H2 tags or whatever. It's like, you know, who cares? Like I'm not the one doing that anymore. It's their job to do it, you know? And then the other thing is, would be like managing a creative process, whether that's using GitHub or, Trello or, making, even though it's creative and things are happening creatively, you still want to have a standard step one, step two. This is how we produce stuff in the business. And then level three, this is something that I'm kind of just learning this year, is managing your first full-time employees. I've had full-time employees before, like in Restaurant Engine, but this is the first time that I have US-based like W-2 employees, which if you're here in the US, it just adds a whole level of complexity.
It's a terrible thing that hiring someone full-time is like, that's basically what you want to avoid for as long as possible, which is unbelievably stupid and perverse that's the incentive structure, but it really is a very large level of complexity being added on into the business.
That is absolutely true. And I mean, I've been in business on my own for 8 or 9 years. And it's only now like in the ninth year that I've actually taken that step to hire W-2 employees, even though I've had full-time like people overseas and things like that. But this year, it just made sense to take that step with some US-based contractors who were essentially working 40 hours a week. So kind of have to go that route. Prerequisite to get to this level would revenue or funding to support the cost of hiring a full-time employee, obviously. But the essential skill that you'll pick up is figuring out all the HR systems, which is a huge pain in the ass.
And taxes and corporate and requirements and workers' compensation insurance.
Exactly.
So what do you use? Do you use Zenefits or something like it?
I use Gusto.
Oh, yeah.
Formerly Zen Payroll. And, yep. And that is a huge help. And I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah.
But
Still have work to do.
You still have work to do. And when I first signed up for Gusto, I thought that Gusto takes care of everything 100%. And yeah. I thought wrong.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I don't know if you've had any bad experiences. Right. I've gotten like the $8,000 bill from New York State in the mail that like made me lose a night of sleep.
I haven't been stung like that yet.
Yeah. Was wrong, but I still lost a night of sleep.
Yeah. The challenge that I've had is we're fully remote and I've got US-based employees in
states
in California and West Virginia currently, and pretty soon it'll be a couple other states. So every time I hire someone from a different state that I haven't hired from in the past,
new filing,
I have to register my business in that state and like develop or like establish quote unquote a business location in that state. And West Virginia in particular has been a huge, huge pain in the ass to deal with. And they literally don't have people manning the phone lines. And the only way to like complete the registration of your business is to talk to someone. Ugh. I mean, I like literally 1 hour waiting on hold.
Yeah, it's the worst side of business. I swear, if I ever need a productized business, it will be to do this, because I know how much it hurts.
And you know what? I think Gusto has done this as well as you technically are a company can capably do it, because
at scale.
Like what they do is, okay, I say in Gusto, I have an employee in West Virginia. They're like, okay, you need to tell us this employee code or whatever, this address, and then you need to go register your business at this website. Here's the link, and you need to follow up and register on this other West Virginia website, and here's the link. And they've had that information laid out for each individual state, but it's still like you have to go over there and like once you click that link and you're in their government website system, it's like a whole other world.
Right. Then you're on your own. Then you're like, okay, cool. Now what do I do?
Right.
Yeah. So. And obviously so that's a large pain in the ass. The other one is the cost of a W-2 employee. It just totally changes the math. It's just like, if you're trying to pay someone, call it $5,000 a month, I mean, it's going to cost you $8,000 a month.
Yes. But if you're going from like what I do with Audience Ops is they transition from being a freelancer to a full-time employee. And there's generally an understanding that if you're going from being a freelancer to a full-time salary position with, you know, with vacation time and that kind of stuff built into it, and the consistency and reliability of having a steady paycheck all year long.
Right. The take-home number goes down.
Yeah, the take-home number goes down, and they're no longer paying their own self-employment taxes.
Right. You're just shifting it. In effect, you're shifting the tax burden from them to you.
Yeah, but there's no doubt about it. There are higher costs for my business than hiring freelancers. Even paying freelancers is a higher rate. That is what it is. But the benefit, I think, and what I've learned is the benefit of having a consistent employee who is dedicated to Audience Ops versus a freelancer who is juggling Audience Ops with other freelance opportunities. That's a huge benefit. And I've had freelancers have to drop out because they took other gigs or a developer gets too busy, or, you know, those are real problems. And it's kind of a pain to keep hiring and rehiring when you can just hire a few people full time and get them dedicated. Of course, you want to have the consistency of revenue to get to that level. But the last two levels, I'll just kind of like combine them here. It's really like managing managers. Well, all right. So like one level is like managing managers, which is, I talked about it, like we have managers and also like creative leads. So like product owners or technical, like a chief, like a CTO or something.
Actually, someone with a team.
Yeah, a team under them. And I think the key thing that you'll learn, that I've been learning here, is like my role as a manager of managers is to really coach them. Like I just coach them on how to be better managers with the people underneath them.
As opposed to getting involved in their day-to-day
affairs. Yeah, like my whole goal when I hire managers is because I don't want to be managing the day-to-day, you know, details of every single client and all the things that are going on and the ins and outs. That's their role is to manage the deadlines with writers and manage the revision requests and all these things. But, you know, there are little issues that pop up and there are ways to be a better manager of people and management style. And it's not that I dictate, you know, that you should, this is how I would do it and you have to do it how I would do it. But I try to coach them and help them be a better manager in their particular style. And this also kind of applies to, like, I have a salesperson now. I'm kind of coaching him on how to be a better salesperson. I'm listening into his calls and kind of coaching him that way. And like, it's not like he's ever going to speak exactly the way that I speak to people. But I can coach him on like, well, I would have approached this question a little bit differently or something like that.
Yeah, that's such a funny reflex to see that like in real time, when how they answer and how it's different from how you would respond. And you kind of just have to be more and more okay with it.
Yeah. And it's you kind of put your fist in your mouth a couple of times in the beginning, because it's, you know, you get, especially if you've been doing all the sales yourself, as most founders do for a while, and to hear somebody else representing your company to potential new clients, it's like, ugh. So it's been several weeks of training him and listening to calls, and you do start to see a clear improvement. You know, he gets more confident. He gets, you know, the answers just kind of roll off, whereas before there's a lot of ums, I'm not really sure, you know. So it's definitely getting improved. I think the final level, I know that you have more experience in this than I do at this point, is managing executives. That's kind of how I put it. But this could be like managing partners or promoting an employee to equity holding positions. Like for me, I'm a solo founder and that has its challenges. But I think I work better in that way, but I still seek out kind of side project partnerships. Like you and me are partnered on this podcast and I do conferences with people, but like for you, you have partners in your business. So the idea, like how do you think about managing partners and collaborating at that level?
It swings from being really easy and natural to being very challenging. And there's so many things wrapped up in that, because we're a small company. It's a team of three people. So inevitably you become very close. And when you become very close, everything gets personal and you're friends and you know everything about each other's families, what you do on the weekend, and you're posting pictures of your kids in Slack. And that familiarity breeds a cohesiveness and like a great culture. But what it also does is it makes it challenging to confront. It makes it challenging to push. So it goes back and forth. So I find myself – sometimes I end up critical of myself. Like I need to be more of a manager, a little bit colder in the approach. And then sometimes I just think, you know what? This is how I want to run my company, and this is how I'm going to run my company. Instead of just being so critical about what should I be doing? You know, it's like, screw that. This is what I'm doing because this is how I want to do it. So yeah. It's not like it's the worst thing in the world.
I like that thought too, because I like, for me, there are a lot of things like I have a big team now, and I for a while I felt like I should be having weekly meetings with my team. Or daily meetings.
Or at least your managers or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but like I don't do that. And like the few times that I've tried to do that, it's like we're just not that productive on this weekly meeting, you know? So
yeah, sometimes the goal isn't productivity though.
Right.
Sometimes the connection, you know, I attribute our resiliency in the past year. In, you know, when Ben first joined, man, we hit a fucking tech nightmare. Like 3 months in, we just went from like, you know, 20 customers to 50. We had a bunch of big ones and our system just exploded, man. Everything fell apart and we were emailing, you know, hundreds of people incorrectly. And that was tough to go through. And then we hired Rock and he rebuilt the whole system and everything improved. Then we got this idea for the Shopify thing. And we went through this whole giant roller coaster of a nightmare of being rejected and then being accepted, all this other stuff. We came out of that. We're crazy about each other. We just have a great time and we consider each other really good friends. So if we didn't have that cohesiveness, we would not have come out nearly as strong and confident in the future, even though we've had setbacks. So that's hugely important. So I think I try to pick my battles. I try to say, is this really, you know, I like have the conversation with myself before I have it with Ben or Rock or either one. If I'm unhappy about something, instead of just coming out and being like, this is bullshit, why isn't this getting done? I like have the conversation with myself first. I'm like, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Is this like fair for me to criticize this? And if I come to the conclusion that yes, I have a right to be frustrated about this and it needs to be addressed kind of out loud instead of just kind of behind the scenes, then I'll do that. And because that's relatively rare, when I do it, it's kind of like serious.
Yeah. It's like, this is worth a conversation. So just the conversation in itself means this is important.
Right. Right. So it's like, okay, you know, we try to, we have fun and everyone's like pushing each other without pushing. Everyone wants to do well because the other person is pushing forward and working hard. But then every once in a while, it's like, you know what? Let's escalate this into, okay, guys, we need to talk. This is a problem. This isn't getting done. And this is falling behind for some reason. And that's not okay. We're not ready. We need to be ready. So yeah, so it's kind of like a pick your battles thing.
Yeah, for me, I like to write things out first. And sometimes it's just like an internal note for myself. Just like, let me get all my thoughts out in written form. Because if I write them out and then it still makes sense, like writing it out for me makes me think through it in a logical sense so that like just in case somebody else is going to read this, like sometimes I write it out in a really long email before, like even if we plan to have a call or a meeting later in the day, I'll write all the thoughts that I want to get out ahead of time in an email to that person. So that it's like, you get what I want to talk about. Once we get on the call, it's really just about answering any questions about it. You know, I just find that like I tend to ramble a little bit on the meeting and not get the message through unless I write it first.
Right. It kind of forces you to organize your thoughts and it makes you go slow. You type a lot slower than you think.
Yeah. And you can go back and edit and things like that. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I'm curious on your end, right? So the objection from a lot of people that I don't want to be a manager, there's validity in that. It can be not so much fun to just manage people all day and never like do the thing that you originally were interested in.
Well, I think my whole goal in doing this episode and writing this article is to push back on that, because it's not like you're managing them, quote unquote, all day. The whole point of bringing people on is that they're going to work all day, or however long you're hiring them for. And you're only technically managing them a small fraction of that when you're having the meeting, or when you're giving them the task, or when you're writing the email. Of course, there's a whole lot of responsibility that comes with managing, and you have to develop these people skills and have a lot of patience and deal with the ups and downs of it. But you know, if you are going to grow anything beyond just yourself, beyond just selling your time for money, you have to learn to manage people in one form or another. Obviously, a productized service is going to be very people heavy most of the time. But even if you're doing a pure SaaS, completely software-based product, you're still going to need people, whether it's customer support, development help, design, marketing. You know, you've got to learn to work as a team. There's just no way around it. And I've actually come to a point where I enjoy managing. And I stress from the responsibility of it, especially with a team. This is the largest team in my experience so far. So, but the fact that I was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago with the birth of my daughter. So I'm completely off the grid for a week, and my business is running and signing up new clients and delivering work, and things are not exploding. The only way that happens is if I have great people and they are happy enough to work for me and with me as a team. And I enjoy that. Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's good to get to that point.
That's worth it.
You know,
cool, man. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the article when it comes out. And that's it. Good to catch up with you. I hope the webinar explanation was helpful. And shout out to Chris Ronzio. And cool, man.
Cool.
It was a good one.
All right. Talk next week.
All right, man. Be good.
Later.